This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
Well, I would like to welcome to the Sub 70 podcast five-time PGA Tour winner and Ryder Cup member, Ken Green. Ken, thanks for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Hey, man. What's up?
Well, we're going to get to the Ryder Cup stuff in a second because we definitely want your opinion, but you've been playing the Champions Tour a little bit since we've talked last, so curious how your game is. How was Pebble Beach? How you playing? What's the vibe out there?
I couldn't resist. I got into Pebble probably because a lot of guys didn't play that were at the Ryder Cup, the Davis Love, Stricker, a few other guys. And Pebble's just Pebble's Pebble. I mean, it's kind of like if God asks you to have a chat with him, you make sure you have a chat with him. So that's how I feel about Pebble.
Yeah, I love it too.
The best place on the planet.
How was the youngster they put you with for 3 days? Did you give him some sage advice from a grizzly veteran?
Well, some people might argue with you. My wisdom might be a little different than others, but she was actually a wonderful young girl, and I couldn't have asked for a better kid. I loved her to death.
Well, it's actually really cool to see you out there competing. So as a golf fan, I'm glad to see Ken Green out there on the Champions Tour and competing again. It's very cool, and I'm very happy for you to see you out there
a little bit. I appreciate it.
All right, Ryder Cup. I'm glad we had a couple days to kind of take this all in, because I think if I would have done this Sunday night, there's just so much more details that's kind of came out, and it's a bit surreal. But you've played in foreign soil. You've done this. So give me your sort of opinion from 10,000 feet, and then I'll kind of dive into the details on it on some questions.
Well, anytime you go overseas, it's going to be tricky. But, that shouldn't have one effect on players of this caliber. So, if any of them were even think it does, it shouldn't. I mean, the bottom line is the golf course was too hard for the guys, whether it's because they just played poorly or they're pathetic drivers with a golf ball. That's up for discussion. But it was almost embarrassing to watch, to be honest with you. I was really shaken up that our guys could play that bad as a team. Pretty much 10 of the 12 were just basically, there was just diarrhea all over the place, for Pete's sakes. It was just awful.
Well, so do you, they called it a European-style golf course, quote-unquote, whatever that means anymore, with narrower fairways and thicker rough, but DJ hits a driving iron 290 yards or 275 yards off the tee. So I'm struggling to understand how they can't adapt at the level that they're at to make it sort of work. I was surprised the golf course had that kind of a difference for these world-class players on our side of it.
It really is a mystery. Basically it was set up like they used to set up U.S. Opens and PGAs and back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And, every one of them is capable of adapting. I know a lot of them still hit their driver and probably shouldn't have. So I guess they didn't adapt fast enough. And it's like, what is so hard about hitting a long iron that's going to go 280 yards, especially an alternate shot? Where pars win holes, you don't have to make birdies up the kazoo. And it really is a mystery as to how they all did so bad. The greens are a tad slower because, they feel that the Europeans are going to adapt better, which is fine. DJ, his putting was atrocious. But, that's the kind of putter he is. He's hot and cold. If DJ could putt, he would win twice as often as he does. But it still doesn't explain how it's almost like the momentum got everyone caught up, and the bad golf just kept bringing more bad golf. And I don't know if they started pressing whether they didn't. You know, I'm a firm believer that Tiger is bad for the Ryder Cup team, and it's not his fault. It's just I don't think people can calm down playing with Tiger, and they all crap the bed. And I just – you can't convince me otherwise, because just look at his record. I mean, I think he's won one Ryder Cup. And I just think it's too hard for guys to play with someone as intimidating as good as Tiger has been most of his career. And let's face it, they all do. It doesn't matter who they pair him with. And I don't think it's an accident that both Tiger and Phil, the two best players from the U.S. in the last 20 years, and both very intimidating alpha males, if you want to call them that, don't know how to work together as a cohesive unit. And, you know, you can take that committee that they formed and you can pretty much stick it up their kazooks, as far as I'm concerned, because they clearly showed they weren't together.
But yeah, and there's all kinds of topics we can get to, but going back, when you went over in 89, when you played the Ryder Cup at the Belfry, did you have to prepare yourself for what that was going to sort of be, or is it not that much difference? Because you've played golf in Europe, you played in Japan, you played around the world. Is it that much more intimidating, or is it something that, as a professional, it shouldn't be, in theory, that big of a deal?
You know, I'm a little different person. It didn't bother me one iota. You know, they clap and they yell for bad shots, and that's what they should do. You know, I mean, that's how the atmosphere was. And, you know, you can argue now that these guys are friendly with each other. So it's, you know, not the end of the world, so to speak. You know, back in my era, there was a lot of anger and animosity towards each other because we were having issues with how many events the Europeans should play to keep a tour membership. And of course they thought they should be able to come over here and play nine. And, you know, we thought that they're going to play our tour, they should support our tour. So, I mean, there was a lot of, and I hate to use the word hatred, but we didn't like them and they probably didn't like us very much. And perfectly honestly. And so it's much easier playing today than it was yesterday. You know, the crowds are rowdy. Well, who cares what a crowd says, you know? If you're letting a crowd get in your head, you shouldn't be on a Ryder Cup team. I mean, it's as simple as that.
And back to the Tiger thing, you know, 0-4-0. Like, I don't think anyone thought it was gonna be this bad for him. Do you think part of this could be too of just exhaustion by the end of the season for getting that last win, having to fly over, playing a lot of golf at the end of the year, and he's 42 years old and has been off for 3 years? Do you think he's just exhausted and beat? And the same, I guess, I could ask from Mickelson.
I won't buy that as an excuse whatsoever. I mean, he's as pumped up as he could be. I mean, you know, he finally came off the schneid, so to speak, and got his 80th victory. You know, he's on pure adrenaline. And, you know, I think he just, and this is something only Tiger would have to say, and Tiger will never tell you. But, you know, when he watches, you know, first it was Reed, you know, hitting these god-awful shots, and then, you know, then it was the next guy. I can't remember who his next partner was. But, you know, that wears him down. You know, maybe he started trying too hard. And I don't care if you're the second best player to ever play the game. If you cross that line of trying too hard, you're doomed. And I just, when you look at his record, I think it's on first day, he's 3-11. I mean, how can that be? I mean, this is Tiger Woods. I mean, he dominated golf and nobody could figure out how to play with him. And, you know, Furyk got caught up in it, you know, and calling his buds and this, you know, with the captain's picks and that. And, you know, Tiger deserved to be on the team. And, you know, and quite honestly, Phil probably did. You know, he was high enough up, but how you play him, that's a different story. But I won't buy exhaustion at all. I mean, supposedly we're in better shape than we've ever been. But, you know, they're riding around in private jets and renting homes and all this stuff. And let's be honest, it's golf. It's not like we're beating everybody's heads in playing football or hockey where they're killing each other. You know, this is golf. You know, you only get tired in golf when you're playing poorly. When you're playing well, the days go by so fast because you don't even realize the day's gone by because you're in such harmony with your own self and your golf swing. And that's where Tiger was. So I'd be stunned if he'd ever would say that it was exhaustion.
To the Mickelson, and here's one that I would like your opinion on because I can't figure it out. Of why would you put Phil in alternate shot when he's, 188th in driving accuracy on a golf course like that? Wouldn't you be better off to put him in like a...
I mean, 95% of us are wondering that. And then to make it even worse, all right, so say you are going to mix it up for whatever reason. And why wasn't Phil teeing off on the even holes? Well, at least you have three par threes, and you have three holes where you're not even hitting driver. So he only has to hit driver three times, one of them being 18, which very seldom does the match come down to 18. And yet he tees off on the odd holes. So, I mean, that whole mixture of who they put in there and then who teed off in one holes would have been dead opposite of what I would have done.
Yeah, I didn't know if you had a different insight of, I mean, I'm just a fan sitting here watching it, and I'm going, how does this make any sense? It just seemed, you know, I guess...
Well, this is where the inner circle gets involved, and, you know, whether it's all the vice captains and all the players, and they're all getting together talking, you know, I'd be stunned if Phil himself didn't have something to say about that. Because, you know, let's face it, you know, you're Jim Furyk, and you've got Phil and Tiger on your team, you look up to them. They have been, you know, head and toes over everybody else. So you have to respect their opinion and their thought. And it's hard to disagree with those two men. You gotta have the, you know, nerves of steel, or someone who's like me who's just a whack job, to say no to Tiger and Phil. This is how it's being done.
Well, you didn't even think for Phil's Ryder Cup record on, you know, he would want to be in better ball and not that. Just, I mean, it's not like he's exactly been in top form the last couple of weeks. You think for his own legacy and outcome, he'd say, hey, boss, this is better for me, or hey, captain, this is better for me to play in this format.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he comes off, if you look at some of those shots he hit, you can't tell me he wasn't, the demons had taken over Phil. Now, he can get rid of them, and that's fine. But right now, the demons are all over him. And it defied logic how someone who's that good can't even get an iron near the fairway. I mean, we're talking, you know, 30, 40-yard misses off of his target. I mean, with an iron. I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling. You know, and then when people, you know, when people like to argue that today's players are so much better than yesteryear's, I think this Ryder Cup might have explained why they're not even close.
There's another couple things that happened here. The whole Patrick Reed, Jordan Spieth spat or argument, however you want to look at it. I was surprised they didn't play together, but I also understand Spieth probably wants to play with Thomas. Does that whole thing, A, surprise you? B, do you see fault with any of those two players in that press conference, how they handled it? And C, how much of that should have been handled, taken care of by Captain Furyk, and to let it get this out of control afterwards, dynamics that must have happened? I've never been in one of those team rooms. You have. Just sort of how do you think that situation went down, and how do you think it's handled?
This goes back, in a way, back to Phil, and I think it was 14, where he opened his mouth up against Watson instead of handling everything inside.
Yep.
And today's players feel they can do the same. And that's just not how you win or become a team. I mean, anybody who knows anything about teams, sports, you know, you have to have somewhat of a mixture. Now, it's inexcusable for a player. I don't care if you like them or not. You should be able to play with anybody. And if the two of you, for whatever reason, have a great record, and then suddenly, because your other best friend is on the team, you want to play with him. And this goes back to allowing the players in this committee to have so much say. Because who wouldn't want to play with their best friends? You know, Reed and Spieth are not best of friends. You know, and, you know, common logic says, okay, put your best friends together. Well, I don't know who is Patrick Reed's best friend. You know, maybe that's why he was put with Tiger, because Tiger can handle all that. You know, but, you know, it's not like Spieth and Reed have only played one Ryder Cup. I think this was their third, I think.
Yeah, together. And it worked. I mean, you know.
And then, so, but something had to have been going on. I mean, you know, you got one guy who will say too much and maybe not the whole truth. And you got one guy who's going to say very little and maybe not the whole truth. And, you know, I'm a believer of just answer the damn question honestly. This is golf. We're supposed to be the most honest people on the planet in terms of following rules and stuff. And yet we're taught by the powers that be, our commissioners, and to deceive and lie to the sponsors and the public all the time. And it's just dead wrong. And this is another example of it. You know, just spit it out. It's okay. You just go play.
Does Reed get a bad rap, or do you, just from afar, and you were on tour for a long time, and you've probably seen guys with those really strong personalities, do you think he gets a bad rap, or do you think he's pretty damn difficult to deal with?
I think in today's culture, guys don't know how to handle him. I think I'm fine with Reed. You know, like I said, I mean, he's just saying what he feels, and that's okay. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. But again, that has nothing to do with saying I'm not playing with him because he's kind of a, you know, a moron and I don't like him. You know, it's not about you. This is about the Ryder Cup. You guys haven't won over in Europe in, what is it, 25 years?
Yeah, something like that now.
So, I mean, it's about time that, you know, take off the diapers and stop whining. You know, I know that's today's culture of worrying about what this person says and being offended by this person and what this person says. But, you know, this is the Ryder Cup. You guys make the bed now. You're the ones that started this new great committee, and you better learn to live with it when you lose. And unfortunately, they haven't really handled it real well. You know, they won the first one, which was last year, but it was at, you know, it was at home. And they didn't even come close. I mean, if it was a close match and, you know, you lost on the last one or two matches, you know, that happens. But this was a disgrace, considering that they were up 3-1 after the first match. And from that point on, they only get 7 points or 6.5 points, you know, to 21 points. Or what did they finish, 17? So it would have been 16.5 points. I mean, they got played. They lost basically 2 out of every 3 matches from that point on.
Yeah, and when you're talking about playing with your friends, you played with Kelk quite a bit when you were in the Ryder Cup at the Belfry, correct?
Yes.
And then did you guys... So let's kind of, you know, look back on that. Did you guys politic your way to do it, or did they do it because your guys' styles complemented what you were doing on the golf course and the friendship had nothing to do with it? It made sense for the captain to put you and Kelk out there regardless how tight you guys
were.
No,
I think, you know, again, we didn't have any vice captain, so it was Floyd's decision only. You know, I'm sure Watson and Lanny talked to him and all that, and you know, in my case, Kelk and I were best friends, so it was a no-brainer for them. Because people, amazingly as this seems, a lot of them were unsure of me, almost scared of me. They didn't, you know, because they saw the things that I would say sometimes, so they didn't know who I was as a person. You know, and they eventually found out I wasn't this evil, you know, Hannibal Lecter guy. But it was kind of a no-brainer then, and I think that's what Reed should have understood, and he probably would, but it's hard to say a lot of people don't like me because of the things I say. You know, in my case, I didn't care, but Reed does. Otherwise, he wouldn't say some of the things he said since. You know, to me, it's a no-brainer. If I'm Patrick Reed and, you know, Jordan's best friend is Justin Thomas, you know, all right, whatever. I'll be fine. I'll play with whoever, and I'll play my heart out. And it's, you know, you also got to remember neither, both Reed or Spieth had not been playing very well as of late.
Correct. Yep.
And, you know, so that's a, you know, I know Furyk was like, well, maybe we can create two good teams, you know, instead of one really, really good team. But I don't know. I mean, it was strange in the sense that after you got wiped out in foursomes the first day, you really didn't mix anything up. And, you know, that's the perfect time to do it if you're going to do it.
Yeah, it's not worth it, right? Let's 180 this.
Yeah,
and,
just change it. Figure it out. But, you know, again, so many guys were playing so bad. And that's what blew my mind out is you know, how bad some of the guys were all playing. And I know they weren't playing that bad going into it. So, you know, what happened in their heads? This is all about your inside your head that most of them are never going to reveal to you. Something was going on inside those heads because it was just awful golf.
And then you get to the last, you got to be kidding me moment where reportedly that DJ and Koepka got into words at the Euro team party room, and who knows what transpired or how serious it was or blah, blah, blah. But my question is to you, is that a big deal or not a big deal? Or have you had, without naming names, I think spats with somebody after a tough loss and, you know, assumed they had a few pops in them. Can that kind of stuff happen when you're around competitive guys and you just move on from it? Or do you kind of look at that as another one of these things in this whole quote-unquote team thing that's not working?
No, I mean, I think they'll move on from that. But DJ and Brooks are too good of friends from what I know. And I promise you there was alcohol involved in this. And, you know, when you get to, you know, men, you know, Brooks has played great. You know, who knows what the argument was about, but they'll get over that. I mean, this is what DJ does. you know, he's a booze machine. And, you know, when you're angry and really pissed off and you have alcohol in you,
you're not shocked.
It's bad things are coming out.
Well, I have a couple other questions on how do you fix this at some level? So my first one I want to throw at you is, would us as Americans on the American side be better off to use a PGA Tour event golf course that the guys see every year, sort of like they did with this one that they play the French Open in every year, versus having it at Whistling? And I know at Whistling they're going to make it, you know, like they did at Hazeltine with it, long and not much rough and easy pins and let the bombers go nuts. But to take it to one step more, would we be better off to use a TPC Boston, you name the golf course, and then have the course that our guys have seen 9 million times and use that to our advantage? Would that be something that you would consider doing?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a possibility. But the problem is most of the Europeans play over here now all the time. So I don't know if we'd have a huge edge on that stat. I mean, I still think the best match play golf course around would be something like TPC Sawgrass, but PGA of America and PGA Tour would never agree together. You know, they're
correct.
They have too much, you know, too much bad blood between them to pull off that, which to me would be, you couldn't ask for a better golf course, so to speak, because then, you know, you need to have your total game to play there. But in terms of what you can do over here, again, it's trickier because of the fact that so many of the Europeans do play here. But, you know, do you do more homework on where each player misses their tee shots and their players miss their tee shots? So, you know, you kind of favor the rough one way or the other, you know, for the Americans. Say if they all have a tendency to miss it left, but the Europeans have a tendency to miss it right, you know, then you make the rough on the right a little worse. You know, if you really wanted to study the stats on putting, you could look and see how they do at certain courses where the greens are going to be really fast. And, you know, because they have all these stats now on everybody. So you can easily cipher out where Europe is weak and where the Americans are best. You know, and all that does is give you a little bit of an edge, but you still got to go out and play it. And, you know, right now our guys can't seem to basically relax, especially when they go over there. And, you know, whether it's part of it's the Tiger effect or the Phil effect or just something's not right with all the guys, again, only they know, and they're not going to tell you the truth anyway. So that's all within that circle. But until they learn to just relax and let it go, they're probably going to keep taking a beating over there. You know, I mean, the Europe's got good players.
Do you think it's going to keep ping-ponging back and forth as we set our golf course up the way the American style, let's say, slightly favors us? Do you think it's going to be harder and harder in the future, I guess, when I'm asking, for both sides to win on foreign soil as they keep tweaking these golf courses in theory? Like you said, it might even be in their heads, but to perceive to give you that home team advantage seems like I hear about this more now than when you were playing in the Ryder Cup or even 10 or 15 years ago. Do you think that's going to be a real factor as this goes forward?
Sadly, I do, you know, because, you know, now the Europeans have the perfect game plan, really, besides their natural friendlier atmosphere within themselves. They also know that the Americans struggle on courses that are set up like this. So, you know, when they go back to Italy without knowing the golf course, I would be stunned if they're not, you know, if they don't go with, you know, the heavier up. And why our guys couldn't figure that out is still beyond me.
If that happens, then let's assume you're right. Do they have to start looking at their captain's picks totally different, where you have to take Kuchar, trying to get guys who could play that kind of non-power golf really well because they're really straight? You know, do you look at a Xander Schauffele more than a Bomber, a Tony Finau? Do you have to then start really thinking about the team that you're sending over there that might make the most sense to go that route versus just who's the best guy over here?
I think you're crazy if you don't.
You think you do?
You have to do that. Absolutely. And, you know, it's like, you know, he takes Finau and Bryson. Now, I don't know their stats off the top of my head, but I know they're not good off the tee. And I don't understand why Bryson is, because he's not like he's a bomber. But, you know, so why didn't you have at least one or two guys that are the straightest drivers of the golf ball? You know, and have them. And I don't care if you really want to break it down, you only play them in the alternate shot.
Right.
You know, say, okay, I'm picking you. You're going to play the alternate shot matches. And if you win, you'll play it again the next day, you know, and then you play a singles match. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, anybody builds a team based on what you're going to do, how you're going to set up the field, so to speak. If you're a baseball player and you have fast people, you know, sometimes they'll firm it up and draft accordingly, or football, you'll draft accordingly to your, you know, your quarterback and his skills. Well, then, you know, maybe you should. You know, I'm not a big fan of four captains' picks for America. That all started with Azinger, because the Americans started moaning and groaning so damn much. I think it's wrong that the captain's picks get to play more matches than somebody who earns it.
So you would
and
have no
that
problem,
happens every time.
Yeah, as a captain saying, look, you're a captain's pick. I picked you for this reason. You're playing in, like you said, alternate shot until Sunday, unless unless you're on a heater winning every match. That's why you're here. And basically being dead honest, even
right,
with a player of that level, and saying, this is why I picked you. And you're just going to have to live with it.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to figure out a way to win over in Europe. This is what it's all about. We can't keep playing back and forth and see who gets the best luck. You know, because sooner or later, they're going to win over here because they know these golf courses so well.
Right, right. That's,
you know, I mean, we're going to Whistling Straits, then they're going to Bethpage, so they know that puppy. You know, they're going to beat us over here every once in a while, and right now, we can't say that. I mean, it's a disgrace because, quite honestly, it's not even close who has the better team. They've got a handful of good players, but we're much, much deeper. And we should not be losing, 12 straight matches over there.
Yeah, and I can't believe
potluck, you'll win one.
Right, and that's why the thought I had of, do you actually, exactly what your analogy is of football, do you start draft, let's say they're still going to have captain's picks. The next time we're in Italy on a little, short, tight golf course, and I never thought about this with Ryder Cup before, but I would seriously start thinking about drafting, for lack of a better word, on these four guys. You could throw Brian Gay out there, who can putt and hit it dead straight. I mean, it's going to be, how in the hell are you taking Brian Gay? But, it's maybe an extreme example, but do you have to have some of those guys on that team, a modern-day David Toms, who hits it in play, putts really good, you use them for those matches, just like you said, and then you let your big boys run, but you have your role players, for lack of a better word, and you try that versus just saying who's the 12 best if you're playing the TPC at Deer Run and the John Deere Classic. I don't know. It's.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And, I'm going off the top of my head, but you also want guys that aren't afraid to win. And, the two that come to my head that are just downright grinded out straight drivers of the golf ball, are Xander, I'll butcher his last name, Shoffley, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, Xander Shoffley, yeah.
And then Kisner, I think, is pretty straight.
Yeah, he is.
And they both have win. They know how to win. They're grinders, and that's what you say. You're here for the alternate shot only. If you want to make the team and play more, then get in the top eight.
Well, my last one I have here for you is on the captaincy. So it seemed at the end a lot more dysfunction I thought that would come out of it. How much blame do you assign to Furyk? Or is there really not that much he can do at some level when you have 12 grown men who should be professional, and if these little spats and stuff's going to happen and they're not going to perform, how much do you really blame on the captain? Or am I looking at it the wrong way, where the captain does have or should have a lot of influence on how this, goes down, for lack of a better word, and what the captaincy is about and stamping it how he wants to?
Well, you would like to think that the captain would have more respect from his players. And it's unfortunate that, they didn't. You need to keep things in-house. You can't let these things get out like, Patrick did or Jordan, and then you got, Brooks and Dustin and all that. And, I promise you, in the next Ryder Cup, they're going to do something about alcohol. Not much. In these after party functions they have, because it's inexcusable. And really, when you think about it, it's a bad eye in the PGA Tour, and we're the best athletes image-wise by far. So, we don't need Dustin Johnson, who has done numerous things to put a black eye on golf, and, these guys getting hammered up and deciding to go, have a verbal fight, so to speak. It's just, you've got to be a better man than that. Now, Furyk, in my belief, he made some decisions that were not what I would have done, but he thought they were right. So you can't say, all right, that was, 10% of the blame. Some of the blame goes on Furyk, but most of it's all on the players. He'll defend his choice of taking Phil and putting him in the alternate shot, which, like we talked about, no one will understand, but I guess he thought he was doing the right thing, and that's all you can ask of a captain. The players have to be able to pull the trigger, and our guys just didn't do it. And, I think it goes back to, and this is the thing the players will never admit to you. You know if you're not playing well. You know if you're not driving well. And all of a sudden you're out there on a driving golf course that is absolutely premium to play in. And all of a sudden you get these little demons. And once you let one little demon in, before you know it, you've got a family in there and you now have just played god awful, and you know it, but you're not going to admit it to anybody.
It's strange those demons, you know, come at the level that you guys play at, because I always would just think, oh, it's, you know, I'm a 2 handicap. It's me if I see something I don't like. You guys are just too good. You just have hit too many quality golf shots in your life. You guys have all won at the highest level. It doesn't enter your mind, and you're still saying at times at the level you guys are at and what you've achieved, it can still happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so interesting. But
they won't admit it, and because think about it, you're admitting a weakness.
Correct.
But in my belief, you don't get rid of a weakness unless you admit it. And I guess it's similar to drug addiction or alcohol. You know, the first thing they say is you have to admit it. You know, whether it's a sex addict or a gambling addict, if you don't admit it, how are you going to get rid of it? So if you don't admit that you have a demon in your head, you're not getting rid of it. It always can rear its ugly head. And when you look at some of those shots they hit, it's more than a bad swing. There's something upstairs was going haywire.
Well, it's going to make Whistling Straits quite interesting in 2 more years after all the stuff that happened with this one. It's if Steve Stricker is the captain, it's going to be he's going to have some fences to probably mend and try to see what they can. I mean, you got to just take it a wick and you learn from this, but it's going to be interesting to see how the next one sort of plays out. So, to be seen, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone pretty much believes Stricker will be there, and you know, I think he'll be the first captain that's never won a major. You know, that used to be a criteria for the PGA, but I honestly believe Stricker will be that, because you know, the other thing that people aren't mentioning is that it's kind of like a good old boy network. You know, they pick, look at all the vice captains. They're the same ones that have been basically going around for the last five cups. You know, Davis was president, whether it's the President's Cup or the Ryder Cup, and they just keep circling around. You know, and Stricker's going to be a captain. Zach Johnson will be a captain. You know, and then Phil, you know, now Phil, you know, people are saying, well, it should be Beth Page, but, you know, because think about it. I don't think Phil would want to go to Italy.
Yeah, I don't see that being a good fit. I don't see that being a good fit. I'd throw him in New York and let him Phil be Phil. And yeah.
I agree with you. I don't think he'd want to. I don't know if any captain. Think about it. If you want to be a captain of the Ryder Cup, do you want to go with behind the eight ball right out of the box?
Well, or
you know, because you're going to their soil.
Well, and, or it could be. And, you, but the other side of that could be if you could pull it off. I mean, you're going to be. I mean, that's going to be one in your trophy case for the. You'll be remembered for that forever.
Yeah,
you know, if you can go over there and do
time will tell if Phil's of that mindset.
Yeah, or you get a low key guy.
Phil can pretty much be captain when he wants to be.
Yeah, or I'm thinking like a low key guy would be good for Italy. You know, not Phil. Like I think he's going to be in the States, but maybe a Zach Johnson or somebody who's more on the quiet side and could kind of. You know, gracefully put himself in there and try to come up with a game plan. I see more of a, it's just my opinion, I see somebody more like that. And you let Phil get America all riled up. And, I mean, I think Phil in New York would be perfect. So we'll see what happens, I guess. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's all we can do.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I mean, we always appreciate your insights in the major championships and the Ryder Cups. You know, you've seen it all. You've been around it all. So it's always great to get your ideas and concepts of what you're kind of seeing and kind of bring to our listeners your opinions, which are always great. So thanks so much for your time, Ken.
You got it, buddy. Have a good one.
I appreciate it.